Welcome to On Topic Retro, episode 44. I'm John Cummins, and joining me tonight is Shannon Eno and Eric, All In Eric from the All In podcast. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Good. I'm hoping that my voice holds out for this episode.
Don't worry. If something happens, Shannon and I got this, right, Shannon?
That's right.
That's why I brought the Game Boy gurus on here, so that if they needed to carry it, they could, because my voice gets very monotone as it is, but whenever it starts going out, it goes out. So we're going to make it last and talk some
make
Game
it last
Boy.
Like the Game night. Boy's legacy has.
Ooh. Well, and like just its life cycle. It's pretty crazy. We were supposed to have two other guests tonight, so one was sick and one had some internet problems, but we do have a list. We're going to have Vin on, and he gave us his list, so we will go over his top three Game Boy games, since he only had three games. But this is the very first episode of season three. I don't know. I put four. Season four of Retro Logic, season three of On Topic Retro. Whenever you run two shows, it gets confusing, especially when you're starting new seasons at the same time. Somehow or another, but first episode of season three, we're gonna continue on doing what we always do. This is a one game a show podcast, retrospective show that tonight kind of is veering off course in that manner, that we're gonna talk about a console as a whole, which is the first time I think on the show. But I kind of was thinking that 35th anniversary of Game Boy is pretty special. I really like handheld gaming. And what a topic to choose. There isn't a better one to choose to vary from the format. So that's why we're running with this one. So, yes, 35th anniversary of the Game Boy. Happy anniversary, Game Boy.
Woohoo!
At least in a couple months, but I'm jumping the gun a little bit. It is the same month anniversary for the Game Boy in Japan. It's an initial release.
So there we go.
At least we're close. Before we get going too much, though, I do have a little bit of housekeeping. I do want to re-mention the Retro Rewind Champions, the Pokemon X and Y Pokedex Challenge. We're playing through X and Y as a community on the Retro Logic Discord and the Nintendo Dads. And honestly, just anyone that wants to, any Discord that wants to play Pokemon with us is very welcome to come play Pokemon. The Pokedex challenge itself is a, basically whoever can catch the most Pokemon in the amount of time that we're playing Pokemon X and Y will win the Pokedex challenge. We have joked around. We do know that there is Pokemon Home, and you could essentially offload all of your Pokemon that you have in Pokemon Home into your game. Hopefully you won't do that. And I think that if you gave me a thing that said you had 700 Pokemon, I'd probably be kind of suspicious, leery of accepting your your entry. But in all good fun, we're playing Pokemon X and Y to prepare for the new Legends game at some point in next year. Kind of, I put up a voting, and not surprising, this is what won. I think everyone's got X and Y on the mind. So that's pretty on topic. We want to go back and revisit I don't even know how old X and Y is now, but
it was early 3DS. I think it was 2011, 2012.
12.
Yeah.
So yeah, at least 10 years old, 12
Super
years old,
for
possibly. Yes. Finally getting that long-awaited third game that we all thought we were going to get 10 years ago. Yes, submit your entries for the Pokemon Challenge. That will run at least through, I'm going to say it's going to run at least through May. I don't see us being anywhere near done with Pokemon X and Y before that time. If we need extra time, like if people are communicating with me, we can run it out a little bit longer. I'm not in any kind of super hurry to wrap that one up. So, and then if you would like to be on the episode, just contact me and we will get you on. That's all the housekeeping I have. We will get into the Game Boy here. And we're going to start, as we always do, with our experiences. We're going to talk. I've got a little bit of some things planned out that we're going to talk about. And we're going to first talk about the first time that we got a Game Boy. And then two, we're going to kind of share our thoughts on how we thought the Game Boy compared to other handhelds at the time. There were already quite a few handhelds out. In that era, that generation, everyone was kind of putting out their handhelds at that time. So, what's Eric? I consider Shannon like part of the show permanently almost by now. So you could go first. You're more of a guest than Shannon is. I'll say that.
I vaguely remember getting my Game Boy way back in 1990. I grew up in the military, so my family moved around a lot. And in 1990, we were actually moving from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to Japan. And it was me and my young sister and my other newborn sister, and my parents were really not too keen on an 18-hour flight with three youngsters. So my mother actually bought me a Game Boy to placate me, to distract me for for that 18-hour flight. So that's how I got my first ever Game Boy, is just so I wouldn't bother my mom so she could get some sleep during our move from Fort Bragg to Japan. But my little gamer mind, I was already kind of getting wired to be a gamer. There was this kindly old lady at Fort Bragg that owned an original Nintendo, and I would go over to her house a lot to play her NES and Super Mario Brothers. So I was kind of already wiring my brain to become a gamer. So my mom just, you know, getting me a Game Boy and just saying, here, stick in front of this for, you know, the next few years. It's amazing how something like that would wind up having a permanent effect on a kid.
Oh yeah. It's like the first time you get to have something that's like not only just yours, but you can also take it everywhere. So it's even more personable than a console is.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. I don't know. Let's just talk about our initial experiences, and then we'll go around again with the other question. Shannon, you go next.
All right. Yeah. So I can't remember if it was, I think it was 90. It was either Christmas of 90 or Christmas of 91, but I think it was early. So I think it was 90, but regardless, I have a strong memories though of actually opening the gift. My birthday coincides very close to Christmas. And this is one of those times where it actually worked out getting a combo gift there and,
Game Boy and a game.
Yeah. Well, it came with the game. Yeah. It came with the game.
Maybe you got an extra
combined
game.
Combined so that I could actually get, a little more of an expensive gift. Opening that up under, you know, just, oh, I still have just such vivid memories of tearing off that paper and seeing a Game Boy box underneath and just being so excited. Of course, it came with Tetris. And I would, you know, continue to earn every dollar I could to buy games for it. So many memories of riding. We had a station wagon, but it was one that had the very back seat of the station wagon was flipped around so that you faced traffic, the oncoming traffic, and sitting back there just playing my Game Boy, bringing it everywhere. Very always excited when we'd head out to my grandparents who lived on the other side of the state, because it meant I had several hours to just play Game Boy uninterrupted. So nice. those are my memories of early Game Boy time there. Getting that Game Boy and playing it.
Nice. Yeah, I'm trying to think back now. I don't even know exactly what year it was. Had to be 90, maybe late 92 or 93 when I got mine. So quite a bit into the life. my family wasn't really that big on gaming, but I had a cousin that lived right next door, and my aunt and uncle owned a flea market. So they ran a flea market. So they were always yard sailing and estate sailing and all these things. So my cousin always had everything. So he had like an NES and like probably 80 games because they just would buy all the stuff that they would find. And he had a Game Boy and he had a Game Gear. And so my first experiences playing it was his. And then at some point my aunt found another one at some sale and gave it to me.
Nice.
I don't even think it was anything, probably just to keep us from fighting over the one that he had, but found an extra one for me. Yeah. I mean, we were so close in age, and he was an only child, and I have an old brother that's 10 years older than me. So we were probably more siblings than me and my brother actually were at that time. So yeah, it was kind of like fighting over, you know, we would play Killer Instinct on Game Boy, and we would take turns, and he had a ton of Game Boy games too. Like he had Mario, Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. Like we had so many things to choose from at that point in time already. And I remember getting mine, and I only had Tetris to start off with, because I think it was just somebody's, you know, they just had Tetris from when they bought it and they never did do anything else with it. It was all like practically brand new, and it came in the plastic case, but didn't have the box.
Plastic case that looked like a Game Boy?
No, it was actually like the clear plastic case. Oh. And it had like a few slots for like Game Boy games. And I think like a spot for the AC adapter.
Right.
Okay. And, yeah, so I started out with Tetris, and I ended up getting a few more games pretty early on, but didn't really get anything major until Pokemon probably in 98. So I played a lot of the same games, or either borrowed his games to play. I racked on Mega Man quite a bit. I had one of the Mega Man games.
Very nice.
But yeah, that's my Game Boy experience. Eric, how did you feel like Game Boy compared to other handhelds, or what experiences did you have with other handhelds at that time?
I do remember sitting, you know, I talked about we moved to Japan. I do have another very vivid memory of sitting in a military barber shop while living in Japan, and I'd been playing my Game Boy. I had my gap, you know, I'd spent a ton of time, you know, with my nose pressed up against the screen by this point, but I do very vividly remember going into this military barbershop, seeing another kid with their mom waiting to get a haircut. And this kid had a Game Gear in the early 1990s. Ooh. And just from a purely visual perspective, you know, you see the greenish grayish, that kind of iconic color scheme of the Game Boy. And then all of a sudden you see what Sega was doing with the Game Gear. And it was so bright and so vibrant and just so many colors, just literally all of the colors. And it was kind of impossible not just to be transfixed. It just seemed like a generational, from an immediate reaction, it just seemed like a generational leap. And this young kid was playing Sonic the Hedgehog on his Game Gear. And I was like, what is this thing? I've got to have one. I've got to check it out. And I had the opportunity to play games on the Game Gear many times over the next few years. And it was so weird because, again, just as visually striking as it was, I always found my way back to the Game Boy. I just, at a visceral, primal level, I just enjoyed so many of those games more. As much as I love
sheer volume,
exactly, yeah. As much as I love having like a lot of the old Game Gear games on my 3DS now, you know, I look back at the library for the Game Boy, and there's just so many all-time classics in that catalog.
Yep.
And this has kind of become Nintendo's MO. despite not being as technically impressive as their neighbor, Nintendo found a way to not just survive, but thrive within this market. And it's just always fascinated me. It started with the Game Boy, but even when stuff like the Game Boy Color and the Game Boy Advance come out, and Sony was coming out with the PSP, which was vastly superior technically to what Nintendo was doing, and yet the Nintendo Game Boy Advance and the 3DS was still, the DS and the 3DS was just still absolutely wiping the floor with this vastly more powerful console just because of the strength of the software. And that was something that I saw very early on, and I couldn't believe it. I was immediately transfixed with Game Gear, but almost like I was just some lustful fling. I found my way over to the Game Gear, but I always made my way back sooner rather than later to my Game Boy.
Yeah, Game Gear is pretty amazing because it's technically just a Master System in handheld form. I mean, it's the same hardware, same everything. It just played Game Gear games. And that was kind of like what was going on with handheld consoles at the time. Like, pretty sure the Atari Lynx was pretty much just a console form of, you know, with handheld casing and it had a screen to it. The thing was a monstrous. It was like the size of a VHS tape. And then...
I'm sure most people listening to this can't even compare that in their mind.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not. But yeah, so like a DVD case plus 3 inches
there you go.
Of length. But and then I mean when you really think about it too, the TurboGrafx, the Express, it was basically a TurboGrafx just with a screen so you could play it portably, and it was more like the size of it was larger than the Game Boy. So portable is a very loose word in the 80s and 90s. You know, you could take these things on the go. They weren't very portably friendly. Like,
no, they were murder weapons.
Putting them
they
in
were
your
massive.
Pocket unless you had like some JNCO jeans. It wasn't. You had to have a case and like it was like carrying it in a backpack or something. But yeah, Nintendo definitely did way more with less. And I mean, we'll talk about that quite a bit when we talk about the development of the Game Boy a little bit later. But it does always amaze me because it was kind of a half step down from the NES as far as its power and you know, graphical capability, and even the color palette wasn't even half.
But it was, you know, on the go.
You have like 18 shades of pea green, maybe not even that many. But no, it definitely is. It's pretty striking that Nintendo took down the competition in the market with something that was basically a calculator, you know, in comparison to a portable Master System, which should have just cleaned the floor with everything except for it cleaned the floor with batteries.
Yep,
like, you couldn't play it portably for longer than an hour.
Yep.
And the games were good, the ones that were good, but whenever they were bad, they were really bad. It was pretty tough to find good stuff.
Yeah, the battery life on the original Game Boy was vastly superior, although I do remember when Nintendo went to the Game Boy Pocket, and instead of 4 AA batteries, you went to 2 AAA batteries.
Yeah. Definitely. And it still lasted as long, which is pretty amazing. But like the screen technology got a lot better. Screens zap so much battery. That color screen, you know, backlit screen that the Game Gear had is what made it use 6 batteries and use them all up in an hour.
Yep.
2 hours tops, depending on what you were playing, how graphically intensive the game was.
I remember playing, I did have a frat. I never owned any other handhelds, unless you want to count those Tiger handheld games.
Oh, dude, I had to shut up the Tiger hand. I love those things, man.
Those were the extent of my... I did not have any... Well, I had... So I had a literal Super Mario Brothers literal watch had an LCD game built in with like the 4 little buttons to control Mario.
You had the literal Game & Watch.
Yes, the literal Game & Watch. and Tiger handheld games were about the extent of anything I owned outside of the Game Boy for handheld gaming. But again, I had a friend who had Game Gear, and just a couple games. I remember playing Sonic on it, but for whatever reason, the game that stuck with me from that system that he had was he had like Krusty's Funhouse or something like that. Oh, and it was like basically like a Lemmings game. And I remember spending more time pulling batteries out of every device in his house to try to keep playing than actual gaming time. And I just have this memory of his mom coming home and go, why is there no batteries in this house? Where are all the batteries to everything?
Yeah.
We had taken why every can't we watch TV? Right.
Krusty, exactly. Come on.
Every battery.
Stop so draining my batteries.
I think that is probably one of the reasons why right there that, you know, that helped contribute to the Game Boy's success and Game Gear's failure. While it looked so cool, I mean, you just spend so much money in batteries and just constantly changing out the batteries. Oh, and the Nomad was
even worse.
Heaven forbid if your game can't save and you have to start over every hour when you're having to change the batteries.
Yeah.
Unless you try to like plug it in and then, you know, try to remove the batteries and try everything.
That's what I remember is like a year or two after the Game Gear came out, you basically didn't see anybody not tethered to an outlet. Everybody had that right. wall charger yeah. for the Game Gear like a year or two then. After it came out. And
which takes away a little bit of that portability too, you know?
It makes it unportable.
Of course, we're sitting here on our Game Boys, and yes, we can continue to play long past that hour mark, but we also had to have lights and magnifying glasses.
Exactly.
You know, all of these things added onto it just so we could see the screen, you know, when it wasn't dark. In the room, but you know, so we you know had to make some concessions as well, I guess, but yeah, that was about the extent of any other kind of handhelds.
Did you guys know anybody that had a Nomad?
No, I didn't.
I do not. Mm-mm.
I had a buddy that had a Nomad, and the only Genesis game he had was Risk, the board game. Which is, you couldn't even make it like four turns into Risk before you ran out of all eight AA batteries.
Yep.
and then he would have to start all over again. So we never actually finished the game on there. It did have like the, it was a decent port of Risk, I guess, for the time. But yeah, we never made it very far. But and that one, I think that took eight AA batteries to run that, which it probably didn't last, but maybe an hour and a half either.
That's which, crazy.
Duracell and again, Energizer like that, were all laughing all the way to the bank in the early 90s.
Oh, yes. Right. They were. Yeah, they were loving it. And, you know, the I guess really just the how cheap the lithium batteries became eventually to be able to be used kind of really changed the game for it. But, yeah, I mean, we used a lot of batteries. Like that, my dad would be so mad if I pulled batteries out of things around the house. But I would pull batteries out of the clocks, and you'd be like, "What? Yep. Why is this clock not?
Why isn't it working anymore?"
Come on, Dad. Do we really need batteries for the smoke alarm?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. If smoke, that's why the smoke alarms strategically use 9-volt batteries because they don't get used for anything else. Right. You always have them. That and walkie talkies, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I really think that's why the Game Boy just did so well. I mean, for one, it was way cheaper. You know, you could buy a Game Boy for, what, $80?
I think it would be a lot
MSRP.
Cheaper for developers to develop a Game Boy game as well than something like a Game Gear.
Yeah. And another big thing was it was just first to market. It had already established such a strong foothold that, I mean, parents, especially in the early 90s, were like, I'm not about to spend $300 to get you another. Just use the one that you already have. You've already got plenty of games for it. Just play these games. So despite the fact that it was vastly underpowered compared to many of its contemporaries, just being first to market, I think, was also just a huge, huge step up and a huge advantage for Nintendo at that time.
Yeah, I was trying to see when the Lynx came out because I was thinking the Lynx might have beat it out.
I don't know if it ever officially released. It was just announced one day, and then somewhere down the line, it was dubbed a failure and forgotten.
Yeah. So the Lynx, actually, no, the Game Boy still would have been first. So mm-hmm. Lynx was September 1st, 89. Game Gear wasn't till 90. Yep. Was TurboGrafx afterwards? I'm
pretty sure TurboGrafx was like 91, 92.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking too, because the TurboGrafx itself didn't even release until August of 89. So can't imagine that they had a portable version out anywhere near that. You know, I'm thinking probably 92.
And I mean, and ultimately all these other excuses, all these other reasons, it came with Tetris.
Yeah. And I mean, that was intentional. Oh, yes. And it worked.
They literally made an entire movie about that.
They did. And it's a pretty
good movie. It is a pretty good movie. Tetris on Apple Plus, Taron Egerton. Really good movie. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, that was definitely a huge get for Nintendo, was to have a game that has gone on to objectively become one of the greatest, most influential titles of all time. Having that day one pack in for your new portable handheld, even with all of Nintendo's legendary pack-in titles that they've had for their consoles over the years, with Mario Duck Hunt and with Super Mario World, and even with Wii Sports, like Tetris is right up there with the rest of them for, you know, influence and for, you know, impact in terms of, you know, bang for your buck. Not only do you have this new handheld console, but you have this instantly iconic game that was tailor-made for a system like the Game Boy. So incredibly simple, yet ridiculously addicting. I mean, Tetris was basically a perfect game. Tetris's gameplay, aside from, you know, like hitting the up button to instantly drop the, like, that's honestly the biggest innovation that's happened to Tetris's gameplay in the last 40 years. It was essentially a perfect game out the gate, and it was packed in with the Game Boy. So yes, well done in that regard, Nintendo.
I mean, to the point where I still think a lot of people, almost the Game Boy version is more iconical than even like the NES.
Yeah. For me, absolutely.
Even though the NES is probably the preferred way to play just because it's color.
Maybe even more iconic than the Tengen version.
Yeah. Could be. Tengen. Oh, yes. I have a version of Gauntlet that's the
Tengen. You have a Tengen version. That's not nice. Still,
I do.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
And it's complete in box. Oh, man. Let's go ahead and start actually talking a little bit about the Game Boy itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the Game Boy released in Japan on April 21st, 1989. In North America, we would have to wait until July 31st of that same year. And then Europe would have to wait even longer. September 28th of 1990. That's almost a year and a half. Or that's roughly a year and a half between the release of Japan and Europe, which is pretty crazy how long it used to take things to move through the chains there.
They had to translate the Tetris blocks from Japanese to German.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And then as far as development goes, we're going to do a very high level version of Game Boy's development here, because that could be like a whole episode just on development, because there's a lot to the Game Boy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all stuff that you've probably heard before, but the development as far as what we're going to go over is going to be pretty top level. The Game Boy was developed by Gunpei Yokoi and Nintendo R&D 1. And, you know, Gunpei was pretty famous for doing more with less, you know, started out as a toy manufacturer, worked his way into the rankings of Nintendo, developing the Game & Watch, like we've already talked about, and kind of developed this idea that of how Nintendo would look at least on the, in their handheld consoles, that they would take kind of aged technology, rework it and make it work with current times. And he was very successful at doing this. I mean, the Game & Watch was, a lot of people don't realize how successful Game & Watch was. If you go and like look up some of the numbers of how many Game & Watches were sold, like mm-hmm. it was wildly successful for Nintendo. In fact, it's probably one of the main reasons why they were able to get into console markets in the first place is just how well Donkey Kong and Game & Watch did.
Yeah, that's where the color TV game came from. Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, it's a big deal. It's, you know, it's kind of sad that Gunpei kind of departed Nintendo and, you know, had to split ways, but, and then he had an untimely death, you know, unexpected. It was, you know, a bad deal, but, as far as what he did for Nintendo is a very big contribution to what they are today.
Yeah.
The original internal code name for Game Boy is Dot Matrix Game, which is even displayed on the display. Like you can see it on the Game Boy itself. And its display, in contrast to the preceding Game & Watch series, that has segmented LCDs that are pre-printed on an overlay, which is why Game & Watch is limited to only playing one game. It's almost like a calculator, essentially, how its LCD works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just all of the actions that the characters have are already on the screen, but you can only see the ones that they want to display at the time, so it gives it action. Whereas the Game Boy basically took a similar technology, but gave it a better screen and allowed you to basically change games out, which was pretty early technology for there wasn't another handheld gaming system doing this at the time, as we just kind of went through the roundup. So it's pretty unique. And as I mentioned earlier, this was the Game Boy was kind of designed with this idea, termed by Gunpei as lateral thinking. So just this idea of taking withered technology and turning it into something that's still profitable for Nintendo to use, cheap to make, and just something that's lasting. I mean, the Game Boy lasted way past any of those other consoles we just talked about.
Yeah.
And it started first. So it just tells you how long lasting the technology is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's mm-hmm. so much easier to find a working Game Boy in the modern era than it is to find like a working Atari Lynx or a working Nomad or even a working Game Gear. I've got two working Game Boys in this drawer right next to me.
And it's my original still works just as good as it did day one.
Yeah.
When they were developing this, there was very heavy emphasis on affordability. They wanted to be the cheapest in the market. They wanted to make an impact with how cheap the Game Boy was, that you could, you know, buy a system and games and still be under a competitor's price. So that's like one of their big things they wanted. And then also battery life. So using there was a method to the madness of using a withered technology, because you could get eight or 9 hours out of a set of batteries with a Game Boy, where all the competitors used these color LCD screens that were backlit. And they just zapped your battery life. You couldn't play maybe an hour of Nomad, maybe an hour and a half of Game Gear. Like, they just were horrible. So it was very important for Nintendo to put something into people's hands that they weren't just consuming batteries left and right. They wanted you to be able to play, because Nintendo is all about having fun. Playing is first. So, and that was very noticeable right off the bat.
And I'll say, like, as a kid, it felt like those batteries lasted for half a year.
Yeah.
Like it felt like I only changed the batteries on my Game Boy like a few times.
Oh yeah.
While I owned it. And I played the gray paint off of that thing.
Oh yeah. They lasted a long, yep. I think it was advertised for 9 hours, but similar to those others, like depending on what you were playing or how intensive it was. I mean, you were probably only going to get 9 hours out of Metroid 2 or, you know, something that had a lot going on all the time.
And then Energizer came out with those like rechargeable AA batteries. And oh, yeah. It felt like I found an IRL cheat code.
That's right.
I'm like, yeah. Oh my God.
The first ones were horrible though. The first rechargeable batteries. Absolutely. Yeah. You would play them the first time and then like they would last like half their life.
Battery technology. AA, AAA battery technology was never more interesting than it was in the mid-90s. You guys remember those, I can't remember if it was Duracell or Energizer, but like there was two like pressure points on the battery. Yep. You could actually check the charge on the battery.
Trying to squeeze your finger into it to get it to work.
Yep.
It's almost dead, and you push it harder just to try to get the percentage up just a little bit higher. I was like, no, I can get a little bit more juice out of it.
As if that made a difference, right? But I absolutely did that.
And it's really kind of as a side note, it's crazy to think that how aged the alkaline battery technology is, but we still use it today. Like it's, you know, like there's no replacement in sight. That's what you have. You could use a lithium battery for some things, but they're way more expensive. And there's no way to dispose of them. So
sure.
we're kind of stuck with what we got, but we've been using those same batteries for, you know, decades. And it hasn't got any better or worse. I mean, it is what it is. Get 1.5 volts of battery out of each one, and that's all we need. But yes, we've already also mentioned that the Game Boy was paired with Tetris at release, and this was definitely a planned attack by Nintendo to ensnare the minds of every Game Boy player. And it's kind of funny, too, because I think whenever you really look back into it, they didn't just want to have kids as a captive audience. They knew the Tetris would also be pretty popular with adults. Like, well, it's addictive.
I mean, that's absolutely got to be why they didn't go with packing in Mario, right? Like Super Mario.
Exactly.
Land. Yeah. I mean, Super Mario Land definitely would have appealed towards a certain age. But with Tetris, I mean, the universal appeal of that, there were absolutely people who bought just a game or Game Boy with Tetris, and that was it. You know, just like people who have bought a Wii for Wii Sports, and that was it. You know, I mean, there is a group of people who that is the experience they're looking for, and they don't want or need anything else. So it was genius. I mean, just absolute genius on Nintendo's part to choose the Tetris as the pack-in.
Also, the Game Boy would go to sell 118.69 million units worldwide.
Oh, which is that it?
Insane. Yeah, especially for a console. I mean, I will say it did live a long time. The Game Boy made it, what, almost 10 years, right? 9 years, roughly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can see it being, it's in a similar case, you know, that I know the PS2 is the record holder for units sold, but the PS2 is also available in the market for like 12 years. So it's kind of easy to be king whenever you're around for so long.
Now, to be fair, I do think Nintendo quantifies like Game Boy Pocket and even Game Boy Color numbers in that sales figure. I do think they quantify all of those. But still, I mean, 118 million. I mean...
Yeah. A lot of modern consoles will wish they could get to.
Oh, that every number. Nintendo console until the Wii wishes they could get to those numbers.
True.
That's 10 times as much as the Wii U almost.
Yeah, it's 9 times at least. The But I mean, really, that's the thing. The Wii and the Switch are the only other consoles, home consoles or home hybrid handheld consoles that have reached the same numbers. And I believe the DS is the only one, the only other one that's went over 100.
Yeah.
For Nintendo.
I think DS was 122.
I think with all of the DS variants, it was like 154. It's like right behind. It's the second highest selling console behind PS2.
But I mean, we're talking about an era where video games weren't like a massive cultural phenomenon already. It was on the rise, absolutely. And the Game Boy absolutely helped push the industry to that point. But gaming, and especially when, you know, like the DS, the entire like DS family of systems released, it was such a different landscape. Gaming was had become mainstream at that point. And there was so much more exposure, so much more visibility, and so much more knowledge out there for everybody. To sell 118 million units in the landscape that the Game Boy did is honestly about as impressive as the PS2's numbers, regardless of the actual numbers themselves.
To me, it's probably more impressive because in the same way that you use inflation to look at how things have changed cost-wise, if you look at this as a pairing rate or a percentage of population that owned a Game Boy, because if you think about it, even just in the time period that the Game Boy existed versus the PS2, how many millions of more people are there out in the world? So this was done, you know, starting 35 years ago and still sold 118 million units. When consoles struggle to do that today with probably four times the amount of people on this planet. So, and with advertising as, you know, kind of primitive as it was for gaming at that point in time, the only people that were into gaming were people that were either reading a gaming magazine or kids that were watching, you know, Cartoon Network or something that or Saturday morning cartoons is where you would see video game advertisements.
There was no Cartoon Network then.
Later.
Those Saturday morning cartoons, that's right.
Saturday morning cartoon, those types of programmings were what you would get your gaming advertisements. There wasn't just a Nintendo Switch ad that would pop up on ABC or, you know, like whenever you're in the middle of watching a sitcom. Not like there can be today. Like, gaming is a way more, you know, it's a phenomena compared to how it was.
I think it's
way to be in the largest media that we consume.
To be fair, I think that the fact that NES, the NES was already at this point a household name. I mean, not to take away anything, but the fact that NES was like at its, really was at its peak at this point of popularity. Yeah. I mean,
It kind of had just conquered.
Yeah.
It was the video game mainstream. It was shorthand for video games. Oh, that's a Nintendo. No, that's a Sega Genesis.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it's a Nintendo.
Yes.
Yes. And so Nintendo was a household name, and so that, I think, did help as well. But, not to take away what Nintendo was able to do with the Game Boy and how impressive those numbers are.
Very much so. I also went ahead and grabbed the launch games, if anyone's interested. These are the games that launched for the Game Boy. We had Alleyway, which was a Breakout clone.
Nice.
I actually prefer it to Breakout.
Yeah,
personally.
I do too.
Yes, I do too.
I love Alleyway. And it played really well on the Game Boy too, actually.
Oh, it does. It's very smooth.
Yeah, it is.
We also got Baseball, which is just a Game Boy. I mean, it's essentially like a Game Boy version of Black Box Baseball from NES in a way. Super Mario Land, Tennis, Tetris, and in Japan, they also got Yakuman, which was just a Mahjong game. But all of those released in North America except for Yakuman, and then Europe for some reason did not get Tennis, which is which is very unusual considering how strong Tennis is in Europe.
It's like Tennis, hey, not getting a, it's like Europe not getting a soccer game or something.
Right.
Yeah. And then strangely enough, Tetris didn't go to Japan as a launch game, which is kind of bonkers.
Yeah.
But
I got nothing for that one. That's
I wonder.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm just curious. Cause I'm not sure, but did they even put a pack-in game with the Game Boys there? Because I know it's not uncommon for Nintendo not to do the pack-in in Japan, right? Because they didn't have like Wii Sports as a pack-in, I don't think.
I wasn't aware of that.
At least not initially.
That's what I was trying to look and see.
I
was thinking that maybe Yakuman might have been a pack-in, but it doesn't appear to be so.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't put a pack-in game.
That was more of a Nintendo of America thing.
Yeah,
because the Famicom didn't even come with the pack-in game. The NES was not going to come with the pack-in game if it was up to Nintendo Japan.
Right, I do remember hearing that, and I remember hearing that that Nintendo of America fought for a pack-in game for the Wii. So
yeah, Sports wouldn't have been either if because in Japan they didn't pack Wii Sports with the Wii.
Right.
That was something that Reggie pushed for himself.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
And retirement communities all over the country are grateful for that.
Yes.
That's right.
They thank him greatly.
Well, I think Nintendo probably should be thanking him greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did a lot more for Nintendo than maybe he gets credit for sometimes. I know a lot of people think of the silly...
the meme Reggie generator.
The meme generator that we get from all the Nintendo Directs. But
his body is ready and all that.
Yeah. Behind that, though, is a very good business mind that did a lot of good things for Nintendo.
Oh, dude. Once the World Video Game Hall of Fame starts inducting, like, actual human beings, like, he's got to be up for the inaugural class.
Yeah.
And his puppet.
Gunpei Yokoi is probably going to be up for that inaugural class as well.
Yeah, he would have to be.
It stunk because, like, after the mid-90s, a lot of people tried to just kind of reduce Gunpei Yokoi's legacy down to the failure of the Virtual Boy. But, you know, as the years have kind of toiled on and, the legacy of,
it's kind of become gaming, a footnote.
Yeah, and the legacy of the Game Boy, especially 35 years on now, has only just become even more solidified. People look back and it's like, oh, yes, he really is a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, he would even go on to work for or work with Bandai to create the Wonder Swan. I mean, he went and did his own thing somewhere else
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's for another episode. We could talk Gunpei as well for a long time. He did a lot of great things.
He did. Yeah. Co-signed.
I also brought in the top five selling games for the Game Boy. So we can take a look at that. Guess what's number one on the chart?
Oh.
Should be very easy to find.
Oh, God.
Some kind of pocket monster thing, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. A game that didn't release until the end of the life cycle of the Game Boy owns the number one spot.
Speaking and it's of not the World even Video close. Game Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Pokemon Red and Green in the World Video Game Hall of Fame, as is Tetris.
Yep. So Pokemon Red, Green, Blue, and Yellow. You can throw them all in there because they're all considered the same game as far as sales go. They sold 46 million total
units. That is just unbelievable.
That's so stupid.
Yes. Just...
40.
So,
like, even if you reduce that down to an average, that's 10 million per 10 million copies of Yellow, 10 million copies of Red, 10 million copies of Green, and 10 million copies of Blue. That is absolutely stupid.
It's also a third of the attachment rate's one third to the Game Boy, which is insane. That's crazy.
I mean, I understand. I have a Pokeball tattooed on my arm for a certain reason, but yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous.
it beat out Tetris, and Tetris was packed with the Game Boy for the majority of its life.
Yeah. Right. I actually have a couple Pokemon anecdotes that we'll talk about here a little bit later on. But yeah, I mean, I mean, Pokemon is, I believe it's still considered the most profitable IP in the world.
Right.
I believe so. It's not the most selling game, but it is profit wise since it has such a large, you know, overcast net of products that it, I mean, even by the time these came out in the late 90s, like Pokemon was everywhere. Like it just kind of exploded overnight. There was toothbrushes and all, you know, everything was Pokemon.
Oh yeah.
So it I can totally see it. Tetris is number two. Being packed in helps.
Yep.
But still selling 35 million units, which is, I mean, still crazy talk.
That's all the Japanese sales from non-packing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, from not even launching with it. They had to wait to get it in the first place. I mean, even if you broke down, like, with how successful the Switch is, how many Switch titles have made it to 35 million?
Only a handful. Well, I think in the top 10 selling, I don't even think all of the top 10 selling have reached 35.
No,
I don't think so either.
Obviously, Animal Crossing, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe,
Mario Kart 8.
Smash, pretty sure a couple of the Pokemon games. Maybe but outside of that, only
Breath
a handful.
Breath of the Wild, maybe?
Breath of the Wild, I'm sure. I'm sure Breath of the Wild, yeah, good call.
But yeah,
Tetris did this, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Completely different landscape, too.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's like 5 billion copies in today's day.
Right. Oh, yeah. Number three is Pokemon Gold and Silver and Crystal, another Pokemon game, which is not a surprise. These games sold 29 million units, 29 and a half million, which is still crazy.
Again, right at 10 million copies per.
Yep. Which is pretty common for Pokemon, it seems like. Game number four, Super Mario Land.
Makes sense.
This was a launch title, and personally developed by Nintendo R&D1.
Mm-hmm.
18 million units for that one, which is still good. And then we're going to round out the list with another Mario game, Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins.
Yeah. I would have thought, honestly, that 6 golden coins would have outsold the original, but I mean.
Yeah. But I think
a lot of people bought Mario
too, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so,
much more time on market. Yeah, that's
a lot
fair.
More time on market.
Well, I think that it got the Super Mario Land, the original one, caught some of the speed that, you know, Mario 3 was putting out there. I'm sure.
Yeah,
and
that's
being
a
more Mario like Mario game, Mario Land 2 is more like a Wario game than it is a Mario game.
Well, I mean, it kind of gave birth into and transitioned into what became Wario games. It was Wario's introduction.
I honestly don't know if I'd agree with that, though. I mean, the first Mario Land had like shmup sections, for heaven's sakes.
I feel like the levels themselves felt more
like you had Chinese vampires and weird like Egyptian sphinxes and stuff. Mm-hmm. The Mario Land 1 was kind of a weird game.
It's a very weird game, but like, when you break it down, it's probably closer to original Mario, like its gameplay, other than a handful of sections. When you play Super Mario Land 2, it's like all over the place. Like it doesn't even give you like a straightforward world map. You can go anywhere you want from the start.
Yeah.
You can play any of the worlds you want. You're just cut loose.
But the levels feel more in Super Mario Land 2, the levels feel more like what was coming out for Mario levels at that time, you know, Mario 3, soon Mario World, as opposed to like Mario Land, Super Mario Land, the first one. I feel like the levels felt kind of Super Mario Brothers one. You know, more feeling, unless you were talking about those levels that were kind of shmups, you know?
Yeah, the shmup type levels, but those were just extras.
Those were
thrown in there for
you. You know, Super Mario Land 1 had really tiny sprites. Like, the sprites are really small, whereas...
I love looking at both of those games and just like, how are they on the same platform?
Yeah.
How are Super Mario Land 1 and Super Mario Land 2 available for the same console?
Yeah.
Like it just, well, it just shows you what 3 years of development time can do for you.
I mean, it's like
Super Mario Land 1 was probably made in someone's basement in like 5 months. We got to crank a game out. This thing's coming out.
You're probably not wrong, but I mean, just like the insane additional visual flair, all of the extra, the extra stages. There were so many more stages in Mario Land 2 than there were in the first one. You had that weird little like slot mini game. You had kind of the open world nature that you talked about. Like there was just, again, it just blows my mind. Mario Land,
Mario Land 2 was probably one of the best looking games on Game Boy.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree.
And when you look at, I mean, it's the same as looking at Super Mario Brothers 1 and Super Mario Brothers 3. Both,
I completely agree with that
comparison. How those came out on the same console.
Yeah, completely agree with that comparison.
But yeah, so it's not surprising that this five-game list includes two Pokemon games, two Mario games, and Tetris. I mean, that's kind of Game Boy in a nutshell. Like, that's what we got.
Not to be reductive, the Game Boy had a really good library.
Incredible library.
Yeah, there's a really great library of games. A lot of great games that I think a lot of people are unaware of, frankly.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still, every time I go into my local, Game Boy section is one of my favorite sections to look at because I'm always finding new stuff that I'm like, oh, what is this? You know?
Yeah.
It just, it lasted so long. There were so many different things. And I built, you know, I think once third party really got a hold of it, we even, you know, seen some better stuff come out. But early on, it doesn't surprise me to see these as the forerunners for sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pokemon just kind of takes over every console comes out on when we talk about sales. And then, you know, Super Mario is right there behind it as a pusher. This is where I put in our opportunity to share our top five games. So,
well, we have a friend. I think we need to share his first.
Yeah,
we will. Yeah, we'll share Vin's first. And let's see. So he has on here number one, Tetris, which I think we all kind of assumed that Tetris is number one for him. Yep. Number two, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, which he didn't specify which one, but it's hard to go wrong with any of them. Yeah. I never got to
play them until the collection.
The Cowabunga collection?
Yeah, Cowabunga. And I'm like, wow, these games are solid.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good games, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the Fall of the Foot Clan, you know, is kind of like, you could tell that it's more of like the license game feel, like beat 'em up.
Yeah, they're basic, but they're fun.
But by the time you get to Radical Rescue, like, that's a Metroidvania. Like, that's a great game design. Like, they put a lot of work into that game.
Yep.
So, I don't know which one he's talking about specifically. I'm assuming that he's talking about Fall of the Foot Clan. It's probably the most popular one or the one that more people played. But, so we're going to say that for now. We can ask him later. And then Star Wars A New Hope for Game Boy, which I can't even imagine what that played like. I haven't played that game.
The Super Star Wars games on the SNES are legendary for how difficult they were. So I wonder if the Game Boy, I don't know. I haven't played A New Hope on Game Boy, but I wonder if it's comparable to those SNES Super Star Wars games.
Probably closer to the NES version of Super Star Wars, if I had to take a stab at it. And those, the NES ones were not as good as the SNES ones for sure.
Yeah.
So that's Vin's list. Like I said, he gave us three and he said that's because those are the only three Game Boy games he owned on the original Game Boy.
I mean, when you own Tetris, so, I mean, that's fair.
Yep.
I think that might be why Vin is the way that he is with Tetris. It's the only game he had. I mean, you can only make it so far in Star Wars, and you just can't go any further.
Yes.
And then you could beat Fall of the Foot Clan in like 20 minutes. So he probably played a lot of Tetris.
I always thought growing up that I was a pretty decent Game Boy Tetris player. And as I'm sure most people did, but I did get to the screen where you clear the 20 levels and you get the rocket ship. But I have played Vin in Game Boy Tetris, and he is on a whole nother level. he had no problem defeating me at all. So well done, sir. Well done.
So if we each have five, I guess we can just kind of go through, we can just list them off one at a time. And if someone's mentioned, we can talk about them. And then if someone has the same one, we can kind of mention it and then move on to the next one. But Shannon, what's your number five?
All right. My number five is Donkey Kong, or quite often called Donkey Kong 92, right?
94.
I knew 94. As soon as I said 92, I'm like, that's not right. 94. Yes. Donkey Kong 94.
DK 94, man after my own heart. That's on my list as well.
Yes. It was a game I didn't get to play right away, actually. Initially, it was actually a game I found out a little bit later. You know, because I had passed it by thinking it was literally just
A port. Yeah, exactly. Port
of the arcade. And I already had that on NES. I had, you know, I already had plenty of ways to play that. And it wasn't until somebody's like, no, dude, you don't understand. That's just the start. And I mean, we did a whole episode on this game before, so I won't go into it in great detail. But I mean, when you get past those levels of the arcade and you all of a sudden you realize, oh, that's just the beginning.
Literally just the start of the game. It's probably like my favorite bait and switch in gaming history. Yeah. 'Cause I had that exact same experience playing DK94. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'm familiar with this level. Okay. You know, run up the girders, grab the hammer, kill the fireballs, get up to Pauline. Cool. And you get past those four arcade levels. And then all of a sudden, you know, it not only does it explode into this massive game, but it's a legit great
incredible game.
It's awesome. Much fun. Yeah. DK94. When I was putting these top fives together, there was a couple that I absolutely knew had to be on my list. And DK94 was absolutely 1000% immediately in my top five.
Yep.
All right. What's your number five, Eric?
I mean, I'll go ahead and just use this to say DK94, I guess, at this point.
that's fine. I will do the same because I have that on my list as well. And really, I could probably put any of these games in any order as far as these go. They're all really good.
Yeah, there is one that I'll save till last. But for most of them, like I said, these are just going to be games that I want to shout out. And, maybe a couple people haven't or aren't as familiar with some of these titles, and maybe I can spread a little Game Boy knowledge and some Game Boy love today and get people knowledgeable about something they may not be super familiar with. But yeah, it warms my heart to see us all sharing DK94 today, gentlemen.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, as far as my list goes, I think there might only be one game on this list that I haven't already done an episode on. So if you want to know more about these games, you could just reach into the old library. There's plenty in there on them. Shannon, what do you got for number four then?
All right. Number four, Final Fantasy Legend 2.
Nice.
Honestly, I could probably, there's three Final Fantasy Legend games, which, you know, they're called Final Fantasy Legend here. They are, you know, actually saga games.
Yep.
But the second one is the one that I've got them all, but the second one is the one that has stayed with me the longest. It just lives in my head. And I don't know. It's definitely the one I spent the most time with. It was actually the first of the three that I got, interestingly enough, but I just have just such vivid memories that I really love. The fact that you pick your party and you pick right from the get go, you choose like what kind of heroes you're going to have. You know, you're going to have monsters, you can have robots, you can have mutants or humans, I think are your choices. And, They all play a little bit differently. So it's kind of like Final Fantasy, the original Final Fantasy, where you pick, you know, what kind of character you're going to have in your party. You do the same thing here. And that's always just something that has appealed to me in these kind of games. I remember finding some kind of glitch. I can't remember it now, but I do remember somehow I found out that if you level up and then you like save the game and then like just turn the Game Boy completely off and then turn it back on, you'll go back in and you'll like level up again or something like that. And so I remember coming across this. I've never seen it, so I don't even remember how to, like, I've never seen it anywhere else. So I don't, you know. No, I should play around with it again and see if I can figure out how to do it. And it only worked on certain types of characters too. It wasn't all the characters, but
oh, nice.
Yep. But yeah, it just a lot of fun. I remember creating a whole document, handwritten out document about like if you had a monster in your party, the way they didn't level up traditionally, they would have to eat the monster meat left behind by defeating other monsters in the game. And certain monster meats would level up certain kinds of monsters in different ways, turn them into different monsters. So it wasn't just becoming the monster that you ate. You know, and so I had like a whole document handwritten out about, okay, if I'm this monster and I eat this kind of meat, this, I get this, you know, kind of become this kind of, and just have it a great
at hand.
Yep. Yep. So much time spent with that. So that is my number four game.
Fair enough.
All right, Eric, your turn.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit about Alleyway and Breakout earlier. I'm going to shout out a, in my opinion, very unsung spinoff from everybody's favorite Pink Puffball. I'm honestly going to shout out at my number four, Kirby's Block Ball for the Game Boy.
Nice.
If you've never played Kirby's Block Ball, yeah, if you've ever played Alleyway or Breakout, those games where you have the paddle that goes across the bottom of the screen, you just bounce the ball up and try to hit all the blocks toward the top. Very basic kind of core gaming concept, but the way that they implemented it in Kirby's Block Ball with like different types of blocks and all of Kirby's power-ups, the different actual boss battles, having it not just be like the bottom of the screen, but actually having damage zones in many of the stages at the sides and even at the top of the screen. The way that they took the basic concept of Alleyway and Breakout and took it to the absolute nth degree, but still made it play as well as it did while looking as good as it did and having really cool music for the time. Absolutely underrated spinoff, Nintendo spinoff, in my opinion. And man, I really wish I could shout out that it was still available for download on the 3DS Virtual Console, but unfortunately that's no longer the case. But if you ever have the ability to check out Kirby's Block Ball for the Game Boy, absolutely highly recommend it. It is so cool.
Maybe we'll get it on NSO someday.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah,
that'd be nice. That'd be nice. It is really good. I'm a huge pinball guy. I'm a huge pinball guy, and I like Kirby's Pinball Land, but Kirby's Block Ball is so much better.
Oh yeah. That fits really good with my number four because I chose Alleyway as my number four.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah. So that works. And Alleyway is basically Breakout. And it's cool because in the initial artwork that they did for Breakout, you actually have Mario in like a little capsule as the paddle. So that was something that was pretty nifty. And they even included a Mario level in there as like a little bonus level or where you have to break a 8-bit Mario sprite apart.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Definitely worth checking out. And I have an episode on that one as well. A microsode at least.
Nice.
Shana, what's your number three?
All right. A game we've already talked a little bit about, but Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins.
Absolutely.
I think this is, you know, quintessential platforming on the Game Boy. I love the nice, large, bright, well, not really bright, not bright sprites, I guess, but nice, large sprites. I actually really like the bunny power up, and I thought that was kind of cool, and I would not mind seeing it come back. I liked the fact that you could go into the levels and any the worlds and levels in any order, kind of come and go in them. You got the, you know, you got Wario coming into the series here. This is a game I really enjoy. In fact, I go in every Halloween. I go in and just to play the Halloween levels, series of levels in this nice. Game. So for that reason, that's my number three.
This is one that I really wish we would have at some point in time got like a DX version where they made it, where they gave it color.
Yeah.
I think it would have been, I mean, it just kind of surprises me that Nintendo doesn't do more with the Game Boy Mario games. I mean, heck, we don't even have Mario Land 1 on NSO, which is
so weird. Is
bonkers to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand why we don't have that. Eric, what's your number three?
Well, the one I'm going to shout out at number three is actually Mega Man 5 on the Game Boy. And the reason I'm specifically shouting out Mega Man 5 is I really like what Capcom did with the handheld versions of the Mega Man titles, because, you know, as we know, that they were dropping a new Mega Man title every few weeks in the late 80s and early 90s. However, the first four Game Boy Mega Man games were essentially just kind of demakes. They were like scaled back ports of their console counterparts. However, Mega Man 5 on the Game Boy was an original adventure. It wasn't just a demake of the NES Mega Man 5. It was actually its own thing. It was actually its own adventure. And instead of having like Bubble Man or Heat Man or Centaur Man, it had new robot masters named after the planets like Pluto and Mars and Terra, you know, representing Earth, and actually introduced a new like cat animal companion for Mega Man named Tango. And it actually did a lot for the franchise. And again, it was its own unique thing. And after four Game Boy games, Capcom really knew how to make a nice, big, meaty, full-size Mega Man adventure on the Game Boy. However, I don't think, and, you know, to be fair, I know exactly why a lot of people don't realize that Mega Man 5 is its own thing after four games that were pretty direct corollaries to NES counterparts. I'm sure everybody just assumed the same was going to be for Mega Man 5. But no, if you have the option of checking out Mega Man 5 specifically, the other Mega Man games are still good within their own right. But if you only had the option of playing one Mega Man game on the Game Boy, absolutely I recommend checking out Mega Man 5. It is a unique adventure for the Blue Bomber.
And it's incredible how they got a Mega Man to work well on a small green screen.
Yeah.
With all the blur and
yep,
with how pixel perfect that Mega Man is.
Yep.
I also have Super Mario Land 2 on my list, so I'll use that for this.
I dig it.
Because once we get to the top, these last three, like, I could honestly put them in any order. They're all really good.
Yep.
So, Shayna, what's your number two?
All right. Here is where I've got Tetris. I have played the Game Boy Tetris more hours of that than any other version of Tetris. It is still probably, it's right up there with, I really do like the DS version of Tetris just because of all the different modes and fun that is in that. But for straight up Tetris, I actually like this version better than the NES version. I know everybody loves the color, but man, I could just, and in fact, I still do just play this for, I'll lose, you know, an hour, 2 hours to play in this, no problem. The last time I was on a plane, actually, I brought my Switch, I brought my Game Boy Advance with a couple of few games, and I was all set to play Switch, and I actually ended up playing Tetris for a majority of the flight. It's nice. It's a game that'll just suck me right back in. The music, it lives rent free in my head. you know, if I dream Tetris, which I know a lot of people have dreamed Tetris, I usually dream Game Boy Tetris. So, it had to be on my list. So at number two.
It's fair. Works.
Yeah. Eric, what's your number two?
I mean, I'm going to shout out, honestly, it's maybe a little bit of a cheat, but at number two, I'm actually going to shout out like a lot of the aftermarket kind of modern Game Boy games that I've been playing.
That works. Do it.
The Game Boy has such an incredible library already just from its initial run, but I love to see how small teams and independent developers have taken that technology and created really cool, really fun, unique experiences in the modern day. Just on All In, we've talked about quite a few of them. A game called Save Me, Mr. Taco is really, really cool. A game called Squidlet is really awesome. And I'm actually, weirdly enough, this complete coincidence, but the game that I'm actually playing right now in my life is called Kudzu, which is also not only a Game Boy throwback, but they built Kudzu on, developer Chris Totten built Kudzu on Game Boy hardware. It's available on the Nintendo Switch for $5, but you can actually purchase an actual factual physical Game Boy card from Mega Cat Studios website and play it on your Game Boy in the year of our Lord 2024.
Love it.
So
for $50.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, for $50.
I just thought I'd throw the price out there. So
yeah,
that's
fair. And I don't think I'm going to do that, but you know, I love the fact that that's at least an option.
Yeah.
So with my number two, I am going to encourage people, if you have the capacity or if you are just a fan of the Game Boy, like we are, you know, don't just look at the original library. Don't just look at the original catalog of games for the Game Boy. There's been some amazing work done in this landscape since the Game Boy's golden age. A lot of really cool games out there, and I recommend people check them out.
I love it. I love new Game Boy games.
Yeah.
Give them all to me.
Yeah, Kudzu's kind of janky, but I'm still really enjoying it.
Well, as I say, especially since we're, you know, any Game Boy games that are made now are just making the most of the hardware.
Exactly, yeah.
A robust game.
Yeah, when you've had, you know, several decades to look at everything, that you can squeeze just absolutely every kilobyte of memory out of that thing.
my number two is Pokemon Gen 1, and I think that's mainly just because whenever Pokemon came out, I was just right at that limit of age. Like, if I was a little bit older, I probably would have cared less, but I was old enough to like really get into the what I consider competitive for me at that time. You know, I was building teams and hooking up with my friends with link cables and fighting and trading, and like,
yeah,
I wasn't so young that I didn't understand how the game worked, but I was just old enough, like it was the perfect match for that time. So that was, this was prime time where I would take my Game Boy on the bus, and like we would link up and fight on the way home from school or on the way to school, and you'd lose hours playing Pokemon. I don't even know how many hours I had in the original. I bought the blue version. And my cousin bought the red version, and we traded all the... I almost had a complete Pokedex before I lost my save file as a kid. I think I was like 146 or 47 Pokemon. And I went over to a friend's house.
Pain over here just from hearing that.
Yeah. I went over to a friend's house, and his little three-year-old sister turned my Game Boy on and deleted my save file while I was sleeping. Yeah. Rough go.
That's a supervillain origin story, if I ever
heard. It is, yeah. I've never completed a deck since, but I was close.
Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, that's my number one. Pokemon Gen 1, Pokemon Red and Blue. I mean,
yep.
Like, I have a Pokeball tattooed on my right arm.
Nice.
The release of Pokemon is like a core memory in my life. I have so many memories of that franchise. I will actually never forget the moment that I first saw Pokemon in Nintendo Power, of all things. I had a subscription to Nintendo Power, like all good nerds back then. Absolutely. And the Nintendo Power magazine had a brief section in every issue called Role Player's Realm, which focused, ironically enough, on role-playing games. And I remember, I can't remember which issue it was. I would love to get a copy of this issue. If anybody knows which issue it is, please let me know. I'd love to actually go back and repurchase a copy of this issue. But
there's databases. Oh, I know. Find it.
Mm-hmm. But there is, I remember reading a Role Player's Realm and just saying, hey, there's this new handheld, new Game Boy RPG that just came out in Japan. It's called Pocket Monsters. And here's the gimmick. You know those monsters that you fight in Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest? In this game, you can catch those and you can have them fight other monsters for you. And that blew my little mind. That was the coolest thing I had ever read in my life up to that point. That was the coolest video game concept I had ever seen. And I remember thinking to myself, this game is going to be huge. And it was the first time I ever remember actually, like, when is this game coming out? Not just going to the store and looking at what was on the shelf. Like, when can I get my hands on this title? Weirdly enough, the first time that I was able to do that was a copy of Pokemon Blue that we had borrowed. I say we, me and my sisters had borrowed from our friends at the time. And just to give you an idea of how much of a junkie we all were, like, no kidding, for several weeks, I'm not making this up, for several weeks, me and both of my sisters would basically just trade off the Game Boy, the one Game Boy we had, and we would play Pokemon Blue. Like, I would play for several hours, then I would hand it off to my sister, she would play for several hours. And here's the thing. None of us wanted to play on anybody else's save file, and there was only one save file per cartridge.
So you got really good at that first three gyms, and then
that's honestly how much we wanted to play the game. We didn't care if we were playing the beginning of the game for the 15th time. We just wanted to keep playing. We were actually addicted to this game, and I was finally able to go get a copy of Pokemon Red at, you know, Babbage's myself one day, and like that, like the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, I remember playing the beginning of that game a lot, to the point where a buddy of mine, we would start the game over with no intention of saving it, but just starting the game from the beginning and see who could get to like the second gym the fastest and then turn it off. Because you can't, you only had one save file. You didn't want to delete your, you know, so you play with fire a lot. But, yeah, I played through that first part of that game. So, I mean, like, to the point where I could turn it on today and know exactly where everything's at, which Pokemon are going to be where, and, you know, have zero problems with it.
Yeah.
It's all ingrained.
Come on, John, do some blindfolded speed runs.
Yeah, blindfolded speed runs. So, Shannon, what's your number one?
Before I jump into it, because it's probably not going to be a huge surprise to anybody that knows me, but I do want to shout out a couple ones that probably won't get recognized. There are just so many that we can't even remotely get to even a fraction of the amazing games out there. Even things, ports of like DuckTales, you know, were just so good. Darkwing Duck, you know, those Disney Capcom games. One that I really do want to call out is a game that, again, wasn't something I was really on my radar to begin with, but, later on, just now has just skyrocketed to in some of my favorite Game Boy games. And that is Solar Striker.
Oh yeah. Solar Striker.
Solar Striker.
Very nice. It's a great shmup.
Yep. A shmup that, that I, yeah, like I said, wasn't on my radar. It's Nintendo made, and it's really well done. Like, it works so well. I can't say that I'm great at it, like most shmups. But man, do I have so much fun just playing that game. And I can't believe they can get it to work so well on a Game Boy screen, but they absolutely succeeded.
It works really good.
But I do, you know, like I said, my number one is going to be no surprise, and that is Zelda Link's Awakening. The first time I played it, I just remember going, holy crap, somehow they managed to do Link to the Past on Game Boy. You know, that's what it felt like. Is it quite as, you know, it's not quite the game Link to the Past is, but it sure feels like it. And it's just incredible what they were able to do with the graphics, with the sound. I mean, you can just go back and listen to the episode where we talked specifically about this game and just hear me just completely gush about it. And then they did the DX version for the Game Boy Color and even made it even better. It just is, it's a beautiful game. It has just some really fun. Some of my favorite, Zelda NPCs live in this game. And then they did it on the Switch and even made it even better. So, every form right from that original version though. It's an incredible game, and it is absolutely my number one game on the Game Boy.
Yeah, one of us had to shout out Link's Awakening.
And we couldn't do it in this.
Link's Awakening is also my number one, so I'll leave that there. But kind of like Shana did, I do want to – there's games like Mulmania that's another one.
Yes,
Miyamoto. Yes. Developed game Avenging that's just Spirit outside the box. There's a game that I did an episode on not too long ago called Trax. That's like a kind of like a shmup, but you're in like a little tank and it has a like eight directional shooting pattern that you can, but you have to rotate it like counterclockwise with the B button and A button shoots. That's nice. A really fun game. There's Amazing Penguins on the Game Boy. Oh, yeah. There's so many good games. The Game Boy is still fun to collect. Like it's still relatively cheap for most games. I mean, there's going to be some heavy hitters in there that you're going to have to pay some money to get a hold of. But as far as the, just the amount of good games you can get for less than $20 is still amazing on the Game Boy, where other consoles have kind of left that market. You're going to get like, even if you're collecting for the NES, even to get like a Castlevania game is going to run you $30-$40 for a loose copy, and you could buy almost anything for the Game Boy for $40.
Yep. So many good games. I mean, Kirby's Dream Land, Dream Land 2, especially on the game, is amazing.
Oh yeah,
Dream Land 2 is so good.
Star Stacker. I mean, there's Kirby Star Stacker, tons of good. Yeah, there's tons of good games on the Game Boy. Definitely, if you haven't checked out all the good stuff out there, definitely go check them out.
And don't be afraid to just pick something up and try it, you know, for cheap. Because I have found plenty of Game Boy games that I'm like, what is this? I'm like, well, it's, you know, it's $5. What do I have to lose? You know, and just be like, oh, wow, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah. I remember playing Quarth once and being really impressed with that one.
Oh yeah.
And if, you know, if I'm going to play one with the monkey, I'm always going to gravitate toward DK94, but the actual Donkey Kong Land trilogy on the original Game Boy was also really solid.
Very good.
Yep.
There's also a port of Spanky's Quest on there, which we just recently talked about.
Yeah.
it's a different game, but it's still on there. Yeah. It's not exactly the same as the Super Nintendo version, but
Spanky's Quest is such a weird game.
It is.
Like, let me throw out all the...
It's still somewhat comparable.
Yeah. Monkey running around throwing out a bunch of different sports balls trying to knock out weird alien...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got all into it. You'll have to check that out and listen to it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The last thing I have on the list here is just the unique feature of the Game Boy that kind of held it apart from other things was the ability to link them all up for multiplayer games. So I think it's possible to have up to 16 players play multiplayer on a Game Boy.
Yeah, I just saw, just like this week, I think it was, a story about a game that was actually... it was canceled, or man, I wish I could remember all the details, but that was actually supposed to make use of the 16 player. Cause I don't know that any games actually did, but apparently it's being released now. Now it's finally going to get released. I don't know officially or not, but, or if it was somebody, you know, some fans that managed to get the code together and get it to work or something like that. But, that actually is supposed to make use of actually 16 players all connected and playing the same Game Boy game.
Which is pretty insane that that's like, you could network Game Boys. Like there was a multi-link port that you could buy. Or if you were one of the few kids that bought a copy of F1 and it came with it, you might have it that way. But yeah, you could connect. I think Tetris was like a really big push for more than one player multiplayer, or more than two player multiplayer. And then you had games like Pokemon where you could just connect one Game Boy to another with just a single cable and trade Pokemon or battle that way. But it's pretty amazing that they could utilize a, you know, serial port on the side of the Game Boy to do linking, but, you know, networking between consoles. It was just mind blowing for the time.
And I think a lot of people would be surprised to find out just how many multiplayer link cable Boy games there were. There were a ton of different games you could play. I mean, a lot of them made sense too. There were a couple dozen, even just fighting games that you could link up, but even role playing games, like some of the old Dragon Quest games on the Game Boy, had link cable features, and a ton of different arcade games. And like, I'm just looking at this list and it's dozens and dozens. It's
pretty expansive.
Probably a couple hundred. Like, there was a massive list of Game Boy link cable games.
Did you guys play a lot of multiplayer, or were you mostly single player Game Boy players?
Tetris was the only one that I really got to do in those early days, because my younger brother got a Game Boy, and he had Tetris, and he had like Jurassic Park, and which wasn't the best version of, of Jurassic Park, that way. And one other game. He wasn't really interested in playing multiplayer games for the most part. We did play some Tetris.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I didn't care too much about a lot of link cable games until Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to have Gengar. I needed to have Machamp and Alakazam. And
it was such a prominent feature to the fact where you couldn't even collect them all if you didn't trade. Yeah. You know, they designed the games to be made to trade. Yeah. So it was definitely something that was on the core, the minds of the team whenever they were developing the core of Pokemon, is that they wanted it to be a community-driven game. And with the Game Boy being as portable as it was, you know, we were trading Pokemon on the school bus.
Yeah.
You know, trading them at school on the playground. If you had a Game Boy, you could take out.
Like, I didn't think I was going to really interface with that too much, but I remember exactly the moment that the game sold me on the idea.
And it worked pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a major, you know, it wasn't a drag to do, which I think helped out quite a bit. They had to make it very streamlined, or it wouldn't have went over as well as it did.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I definitely just wanted to make sure we mentioned it, because it was definitely not a system selling feature, but definitely a feature that set it aside from every other handheld console at the time. You weren't linking up 16 Game Gears together. There's not enough batteries.
The universe would have imploded.
Yeah. We need a power plant to run these 16 Game Gears.
But yeah, oh man. I got all my trade evolutions though. So, but yeah, when it comes to the accessories for the Game Boy, though, we already kind of touched on it. But yeah, the link cable, but the magnifying glass, the backlight, the speakers that you could have, you know.
I can't remember what it's called now, but I have it, and it has like a joystick that you can clip onto. And then it has the fit folding
over top of the. Yep. Yeah, man,
I have one, and it had a speaker, like you said, that you could plug into the audio port.
Can't forget about the printer either.
Clipped on.
The Game Boy camera,
printer, yeah.
You attach all those accessories to the Game Boy, and it genuinely looks like Pokemon Evolution, like a regular Game Boy next to one with all the accessories. Like, it genuinely looks like a Pokemon Evolution.
I mean, they even had a connection that you could put to I believe it was a Brother or a Singer sewing machine.
Yes.
That you could print or sew, use your Game Boy to sew patterns onto things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just insane that the things that they've, you know, Nintendo gets very innovative. I mean, it's similar to the DS being a virtual tour guide for, you know, the Louvre.
Right.
Yeah. So like,
or a training tool for McDonald's, you know?
Yeah. Or a training tool. Yeah. Like you said, they've always done something weird.
Yep.
And, the Game Boy is not left out of that. They've done so many things with the Game Boy. It's just an amazing piece of tech, and its longevity. I mean, we have the one Game Boy that survived the Desert Storm.
Yeah.
That's looks like it's a hobbled piece of junk, but it still plays.
Yeah.
They've dropped them off buildings. They've ran them over. Like, you name it, it's been done, and they still play.
Yeah, I don't have an overabundance of classic game consoles, but I still have a working Game Boy.
Yep. So I think we've Game Boyed. I don't know. There's a whole lot of more things to cover on the Game Boy.
I think we have gamed, boy.
That's right. Pull the Vin out. We pull his joke out for him since he's not here. But that allows us to move into the outro. And if you can think of anything else that we've forgotten, you can mention it there. And then you can also promote anything that you've got going on. I know Shannon gets to do that almost weekly now, but
it does seem like that, doesn't it?
it gives Eric a chance to talk about what all's going on in the all in podcast verse.
I mean, I don't really do too much. So yes, if you've never heard my sultry voice before, my name is Eric with All In, and it's a Nintendo podcast that I co-host weekly with my amazing co-host Seth. You can find us, you know, brand new episodes every Saturday. You can find us on whatever podcast service that you listen to. We are a Nintendo variety show each and every week. We break down the week in Nintendo news. We have weekly indie showcases, top fives, game reviews, retrospectives, all types of different segments. We constantly have independent developers on the show to talk about their games and other people within the industry. We've always got a ton of stuff going on. We have a huge YouTube channel with videos going up almost daily now, where we've always got a ton of content going out. And this week specifically happens to be a very big week for us. We would love for you guys to join us for episode 200. All In episode 200 is the week that we are recording this, as a matter of fact, which we are broadcasting live on YouTube and Twitter/X April 12th. And it's going to be a ton of fun. We've got a ton of announcements. We've got a huge, huge, huge guest returning to the show. We've got genuinely one of the most fun top fives that I've ever had the pleasure of researching for this show. It's going to be so much fun. Please join us again. If you've never heard me or my co-host before, we would love to have you over and in the All In community. Come on over.
Definitely go check out All In. Join the community. There's not enough good things to say about you guys over there. I try to support you in any way that
you
I do, can.
And thank you very much for that.
Try to help keep the lights on over there.
Yes.
I know I enjoy all the content. I, for as little amount of time as I do have being an adult, I try to put as much of it into your guys' podcast and just, you know, all the things you guys are doing over there. It's great stuff. So
thank you.
Definitely go check out the All In world over there. Yeah. Shannon, what do you got going on? I know you've been having some fun.
Yeah, I've just been
with Nintendo dads.
Yeah, it's a lot less work for me than it is for them. But I've just been having fun. I've been uploading some videos of a playthrough of Four Swords Adventure for the GameCube. Nice. Right now on my YouTube. So that's SpiderShan8, I think is how you can find me over there. Other than that, I'm just on Discord. I'm around. I'm in just about all these, connected podcasting communities, including All In, RetroLogic, Nintendo Dads, Nintendo Pals, all good stuff. So, yep, I'm around all those and just having fun.
And very shortly, starting yes. with actual season 4 of RetroLogic, not season 4 of On Top of Retro. Shannon will be joining Sam and I as a temporary permanent host of
that's right
of the RetroLogic podcast. He's kind of been a host of On Top of Retro with me for the last few months as we've been deep diving into every Zelda
anything
game
Zelda. I will be there,
and Not intentionally. I threw a sign up and Shannon said, oh, I'll do all of them.
Yep.
So he has just become a facet of the On Topic Retro, becoming the hero series. And, we love having him.
The hero we need.
And that's right. He's the hero we need. And, with Dan in hiatus mode and taking care of the family and, trying to get to a good place to come back and do podcasting again. I reached out to Shannon and asked him if he didn't mind joining us. We could always, the whole show just seems to kind of work better when we have three people, and especially with the games and stuff that we play on the show, the game show type stuff. So we're glad to have him, and we can't wait to start season 4, which we'll be recording this week. So
not
look
season
forward
three.
To that. Not season 3. That's this season. This show. Too many shows. And then the last thing I have here is that we will be doing the next Becoming the Hero show, and that will be on Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. So that's going to be a pretty big one. This, I feel like this game went from being very poorly looked upon to being a good game, like people enjoyed it, to now it's like a considered like one of the top Zelda games. It's like been on a roller coaster of in its lifespan that it's existed. I mean, people had the pitchforks out when this thing was being announced. So
I vividly remember that.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
People were ready to boycott Nintendo.
Yeah. Yep. They definitely were. And then it turns out it's actually a really good game.
Go and, figure Nintendo knows how to make a yeah, Zelda game.
They know how to make the games. Imagine that. But yeah, we'll be talking all about it, just like we have all the other Zelda games. I think this will be episode 9, I believe, or part 9. So we're getting down to the later Zelda games in the series, which also take a lot more energy for us to talk about because there's so much more to them. The Breath of the Wild episode might be like 6 hours long. I'm not even sure yet.
Easily, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure once you finish with the game's intro, the rest of the episode will go, you know, much smoother.
Yes, I hope so.
The intro will take 6 hours.
Hopefully we get off the plateau.
The great plateau, yeah.
The great intro plateau. But yeah, they'll look forward to Wind Waker. We'll be getting through that one here soon. But that's it for this show, and that's it for 35th anniversary of the Game Boy. We're glad to have it. Thanks for listening to On Topic Retro. It's a part of the RetroLogic family of podcasts. If you'd like to send in your personal experiences for the next show, but you're not on our Discord, you can send them to ontopicretro@gmail.com. If you haven't joined our wonderful non-toxic RetroLogic Discord and you would like to, you can visit retrologic.games. There's details on there on how to join for free. There's also a link in the show notes that you can, or in the show description on whatever you're listening to this podcast on, to join our Discord. I highly recommend it. It's the easiest way to stay engaged with a bunch of wonderful people that are in our community.
Co-signed. I can vouch for that. Join it.
Yeah. We try to keep things orderly and, there's really no better place to be. There's no fighting. We're no gatekeeping. We all have great respect for each other, and we keep it a very nice place to hang out, which is can be hard to find on the internet these days.
Ironically, so there's very little Discord in that Discord.
There is very little discourse in our Discord. I agree. We want to keep it that way, but
I can vouch. I'm not a member of too many Discord groups, but I am here in the RetroLogic one. So
yeah,
let that tell you something.
We appreciate it, and definitely come check it out. And it's not just games. I mean, we talk about movies, we talk about music, food, dinosaurs.
I was about to bring up the dinosaurs
all the time. We're like it's kind of amazing how just people in the community are like, I want to do a podcast, but you know, we know that there's already a gaming podcast, so we'll do one on movies. We'll do one on music. So we just have all these shows now that are great to listen to. We even have a game show
yeah,
that Mike puts on that's kind of sprouted out of there. So
Stegosaurus logic, you know.
Yeah, that's next. We're going to have Dino Logic, and it will go over great.
Yeah, there you go. Dino Logic's right there. That's actually a good name.
Yeah.
Strokes so, beard with interest.
Yes, Dino Logic. Start show notes
exactly after this.
But yeah, no, join the Discord. It's definitely worth it. It's where you get connected and hang out with people that are just like you and play games and talk about all the things that we like to talk about. That's it for this episode. We'll definitely be doing more. Stay tuned. Go listen to All In and have a great night. Bye now.